critical issue that ought to be discussed is a definition of terms.
Decoding promising North Korean comments. It's Wednesday, March 7th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, China boosts military spending, saving Pakistani beards, the latest edition of VOA Business Scene, a double arm transplant, mobile phones on display. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says possible progress is being made with North Korea, but also cautions that positive signs from Pyongyang may lead to false hope. Trump's statement comes after South Korea said Tuesday the North is willing to start talks with the United States about giving up its nuclear weapons. South Korea's top security adviser, Chung Yi-hyung, told reporters that Pyongyang signaled there was no need to keep its nuclear program if military threats against the country are eliminated. Chung added North Korea was receptive to discussing denuclearization and normalizing relations with the United States. Chung was part of a South Korean delegation that just returned from a two-day visit to North Korea, where the group held an unprecedented meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Seoul's statement has not been confirmed by North Korea. If true, the new stance would mark a significant shift for Kim Jong-un. Last week, North Korea said it is willing to begin dialogue with the United States, but rejected any preconditions for such talks. The United States has insisted North Korea must first commit to ending its nuclear programs before entering talks with North Korea. However, many say it's not time to jump to conclusions. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Evans Revere, a senior advisor at the Albright-Stonebridge Group. He has hundreds of hours of negotiating experience with North Korean officials and frequently participates in official and informal dialogues with Pyongyang's representatives.
I think it's important to keep in mind what Kim Jong-un reportedly said to the South Korean envoy in Pyongyang. Just a few hours ago, there was a press conference, and the head of the South Korean delegation, the South Korean National Security Advisor, Ambassador Chung, his remarks contain a reference to a concept known as the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. That is a variation of a North Korean concept. They usually phrase it the denuclearization of the whole Korean Peninsula. And we hear this very often from the North Koreans. We've heard it many times over the years. And we have asked the North Koreans what that phrase means. The North Koreans have very kindly responded by describing or defining it as the removal of the threat. And when you ask them what they mean by the threat, they state that it means the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea, the existence of the U.S.-South Korean security treaty, and the existence of the U.S. nuclear umbrella over South Korea and Japan. And they say that if you will remove those things, that will make North Korea feel more secure, and that at that point, North Korea will be in a position to consider, that's their word, consider denuclearization.
Do you think that in light of what seems to be some rapprochement during and after the Winter Olympic Games, that there is any room for movement or modification of that stance?
Well, that is the subject that I would highly recommend be number one on the agenda if and when a U.S.-North Korea meeting takes place. The interpretation of the North Korean comments during this meeting between South Korean envoys and the North Korean leader is that there has been some movement or a shift in the North Korean position. But in reading the actual words that the South Korean envoy has used to describe what he heard, I don't see an indication of that movement. But what I do see is a preparedness to meet and to have a conversation that relates to the issues that the United States and its allies have raised as issues of concern. And there appears to be an agreement in principle between Washington and Pyongyang to have a conversation, if not a negotiation. And if you look back at Vice President Pence's trip to the Pyeongchang Olympics, and if you look at the visit by a North Korean envoy a few days later for the closing ceremony, on both of those occasions, both sides indicated a preparedness to have some sort of a contact or communication or conversation. And neither side has actually backed away from that. And now you have this new development with the South Koreans having visited the North and have come back with an indication of, or a renewed indication of a willingness to meet. My take from all of this is that a door has been opened, a crack for a conversation, and the most important issue, the most critical issue that ought to be discussed in that conversation is a definition of terms and a discovery of whether or not when the North Koreans use words like denuclearization, they actually mean what we mean.
What do you think we can do next? I mean, there is a whole history of this type of thing happening over and over again. You were part of quite a few of those.
Exactly.
All right. But what would have to change? Is there not a possibility that Kim Jong-un could say, maybe we can form some kind of scenario whereby we do not need nuclear weapons to coexist?
As a diplomat or a former diplomat and as someone who tries to be an optimist, you never want to write off that possibility, and it's always worth exploring. So the very first thing that needs to be done is to have that conversation. The door was opened to that dialogue on the margins of the opening ceremony of the Olympics. The door was open to a conversation. Both sides agreed. It didn't happen. But subsequently, both sides have recommitted themselves in very carefully worded language to the idea of an encounter, a conversation of some sort. Well, let's have that conversation, but let's press the North Koreans for a definition of their terms. And we want to get as clear an understanding from them as directly as we can of what their intentions are and what they're prepared to do, and to find out whether there is any common ground. I'm skeptical. As I often say, we've seen this movie before. We know how it ends. I hope it will not end the way it has in the past. But I think we owe it to the cause of peace and stability and harmony with our allies to at least give it a shot, and then we'll see where it goes.
The Trump administration has led international efforts to pressure Pyongyang to halt its nuclear program by imposing tough sanctions that ban billions of dollars worth of North Korean coal, iron ore, clothing products, and seafood exports. The Trump administration has also said, if necessary, it is prepared to use military force as well to eliminate the nuclear threat. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on VOAnews.com. Donald Trump says possible progress on North Korea may also be false hope. Rohingya say they will not return to Myanmar now. New drug policy aims to eliminate Myanmar's drug scourge. U.S. intel official says Russia and China seek fast futuristic weapons. Dalai Lama event moved out of Indian capital. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China is defending its proposed 8.1% defense spending boost this year. The state-run China Daily editorialized Tuesday that criticism of China as a threat comes from the, quote, usual suspects. It insisted the $175 billion defense budget reflects a modest increase from last year's 7% hike and is still relatively low compared to many countries in the world. The Global Times said it is much lower than double-digit increases that lasted for many years before 2016. It pointed to the more than 10% boost in U.S. military spending in fiscal 2018, with overall spending four times that of China. It said if China really wanted to expand, then a 20 or 30% military budget rise would make sense. On Taiwan, a defense ministry spokesman said the Republic of China has no intention of engaging in an arms race with Beijing, but will strengthen capabilities in self-developing arms, including vessels and aircraft, and expand communications and electronic warfare technologies. Grant Newsham, senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty he finds the Chinese argument unpersuasive. He said no one wants to attack China, and defense spending continues to outpace China's gross domestic product.
Over the last decade or plus, the Chinese have undertaken the fastest shipbuilding expansion within modern history, producing the world's largest navy, coast guard, and maritime militia by number of ships. They have the world's largest conventional ballistic and cruise missile force. Their other armed forces, subcomponents, are among the world's largest in quantity and likewise rapidly improving in quality. This is all well beyond anything China needs to defend itself. And also, I would suggest that the math really doesn't add up when it comes to the stated numbers in Chinese defense spending. They've, as I mentioned, building enormous fleets, launching satellites, developing hyperglide vehicles and quantum computers, while investing heavily in undersea warfare. They're also outproducing the United States, and that's something that one needs to be considered. You can't just compare sort of bottom-line figures. The output of this spending over the last 5 years has the Chinese producing every year four times as many ships as the United States. The same ratio applies to both aviation, space, and missile and other forces. They're just outproducing the U.S. The Americans' ability to produce big-ticket items like submarines, ships, jet aircraft really is not in a position to catch up with the Chinese, at least not with the defense industrial base we have today.
What are China's strategic intentions?
One, dominate the East Asia, dominate all of Asia, displace the United States, and really throw China's weight around worldwide. Even if not seizing territory outside of Asia, at least being able to be the dominant force, the country that everyone has to consider before they do anything. And this one gives them, of course, economic advantages, political advantages. So ultimately, it's about power and domination.
Grant Newsham said China has used to military power and to gain de facto control of the South China Sea. He predicts the East China Sea, next to Japan, is next. Happening now in Asia, a truck carrying a wedding party in western India plunged off a bridge early Tuesday, killing at least 25 people, most of them women and children. Police say their initial investigations indicated the driver lost control, causing the truck to swerve off the bridge. Authorities say the death toll may rise. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Hairdressers in Pakistan's KP province have announced a ban on trimming stylish beards, such as goatees or so-called French beards, calling the cuts un-Islamic. KP Hairdressers Association President Mohammed Sharif Khalun said during a press conference, "We made the decision after consulting with religious scholars." Khalun said the religious scholars agreed that stylish and designer beards should be banned, and that beards in Islam follow the life of Prophet Muhammad. There is a growing trend among Pakistani youths to wear stylish beards. Many fashion models, actors, and even sportsmen wear such beards. The provincial government has not yet commented on the ban. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia, a high-profile function to be attended by Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama to mark the start of his 60th year in exile in India, has been moved from New Delhi to Dharamsala after India told top officials to stay away from such events, calling it a very sensitive time for relations with China. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day to see and share top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, U.S. trade and a special tea house are the topics on this week's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
South Korea's finance minister says his government is looking at diversifying export strategies in the wake of President Trump's plan to increase tariffs on steel and aluminum. Kim Dong-yum says his government will closely monitor the international trade situation.
The government seriously acknowledges the current international trade situation. We will be closely monitoring the possibility of conflicts of global trade, the recovery of exports of South Korea, and possible influences on the world economy and trade.
Last week, President Trump said the United States would impose a 25% tariff on imported steel and a 10% tariff on imported aluminum. South Korea is the third largest steel exporter to the United States after Canada and Brazil. Kim Dong-yum says Seoul plans to strengthen ties with ASEAN countries while continuing to talk to the Trump administration to try and limit the damage.
We will fully explain our stance to the U.S. government and try to meet the Congress, state governments, and economic organizations to persuade them. We will also make use of the G20 meeting of finance ministers on March 20th to hold bilateral meetings with the U.S. and other major nations.
South Korea shipped approximately 3.6 million tons of steel products to the United States in 2017. The tariffs would also impact Canada, the United Kingdom, Germany, Turkey, and Japan. Some of these countries have warned of retaliatory measures against U.S. exports, stoking fears of an international trade war. President Trump defended the tariff proposal in a recent tweet, saying that other countries had taken advantage of the U.S. for years. He called U.S. trade deals and policies very stupid and said U.S. jobs and wealth had poured into other countries for far too long. Trump's trade advisor, Peter Navarro, says final details on the steel and aluminum tax will be completed at the end of this week or early next. In the city of Pune in western India, the owners of Yuli Amrutulya Tea House are making an enviable income off of a simple age-old product, tea.
They don't pour in lots of ingredients in the tea here. They have kept it simple and the taste is very good.
Aside from the taste, customers come to the tea house because of its cleanliness. Employees wear tidy uniforms and boil tea in clear brass pans. This simple formula brings in more than $18,000 per month for tea enthusiast Navat Yuli, who decided to make a living brewing and serving tea in 2011. After 4 years of planning, he launched the tea house in 2015. In only 3 years, Yuli Amrutulya Tea House has made millions. Yuli says that no idea is too small if it's pursued with passion and honest conduct. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, a United Nations official says Myanmar security forces continue to subject the remaining Rohingya Muslims in northwest Rakhine State to human rights abuses. Andrew Gilmore, the UN's Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, says the ethnic cleansing of Rohingya from Myanmar continues. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, imagine you suddenly have no arms and no legs. That's what happened to retired Marine Corps Sergeant John Peck, who lost all four of his limbs in an explosion in Afghanistan in 2010. Unlike many people who suffer such losses, Peck does not have to rely on prosthetic arms. Doctors performed a successful double arm transplant, and now he's undergoing occupational and physical therapy at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. VOA's Yaha Barzinski visited him and tells his story in this report narrated by Jeff Custer.
As Sergeant John Peck is getting used to using his new arms, he thinks about the family that donated the arms of their dead son.
You know, the first few minutes I was happy. But then I started to think about, you know, my emotions kind of changed, and it changed to the point where I was more I was upset. Like, I was, you know, I knew that somebody died, and it wasn't about me at that minute. It was about the individual that lost their lives.
Transplants are not new, and many patients benefit from organ transplants. But Peck says his situation is different.
So, like, an organ transplant, it's different. Like, they can't see inside of their body, but every day I look down, I'm like, ah, hey, this is somebody else's hand, or, you know, this is somebody else's elbow that I'm moving back and forth. But I don't see it as, you know, it's weird. It's just part of my norm now.
From having no arms to prosthetics and now to human arms, Peck has come a long way, and his therapist seems satisfied with his progress.
John and I have been working together for about, what is it, John, a year and a half. And so the progress has been huge. I mean, with just in terms of range of motion in his arms, in terms of his strength and his ability, again, to be more independent with his day-to-day activities.
In the time that we've started working together, we're pushing to progressing to use his hands more and more and more, and he's getting function back.
At Walter Reed, there are many war veterans who lost their limbs on the battlefield, but not everyone agrees to get such transplants because of the chances that the body may reject another person's limb. Patients like Peck also have to take 25 to 30 pills a day to prevent complications, and they also must endure rigorous therapy. But he's happy that he did it.
It was worth it. It was worth it to me. I have goals. I want to be independent. I want to be able to do things for myself.
Without you, I won't be here.
The surgery, which took 16 hours and involved 60 doctors and specialists, has given the veteran a chance for a new life after a near-death experience. For VOA's Yahya Barghini in Bethesda, Maryland, I'm Jeff Custer, VOA News.
The world's biggest mobile phone trade fair, the Mobile World Congress, or MWC, has just concluded in Barcelona, Spain. Except for Apple, which traditionally stays away, all other big and small phone manufacturers and developers displayed their wares as they continue to battle a market valued at $478 billion in 2017. VOA's George Pudich dials up the details.
Smartphones seem to have reached the point where not much can be improved.
I think we've pretty much hit a glass ceiling of innovation. You look at the refresh cycles now that Samsung and Apple have in their products, it tends to be a three-year rather than a two-year cycle when you have a big upgrade.
So manufacturers turn to other smartphone features, such as the cameras. Samsung's new Galaxy S9 is basically the same as the previous model, except for the improved camera. It can make better pictures in low-light situations and can detect high-speed motion, automatically recording it in slow motion. For those who simply cannot afford the $800 phone, Google has developed a new operating system called Android Oreo Go. It's specifically designed for cheaper phones.
With Android Go apps, they take into account things like data. So on YouTube, it'll actually lower the amount of data that it takes to play a video because, well, data is expensive in developing countries.
The new operating system will be ideal for a range of affordable smartphones, such as Nokia's revamped slider phone 8110, launched in 1996.
We are fortunate enough to have with Nokia so many awesome iconic design legends, and this year it's the 8110 reloaded, and we're bringing it back, but with 4G and Wi-Fi.
Accessories and gadgets ranging from see-through wall devices to robots also competed for customers' attention.
What we're trying to see is people beginning to try and differentiate with new accessories, new features on the phone, but allowing the user to customize their phone rather than customizing it by default.
And for those who just cannot imagine the world without selfies, there is also a machine that can print any image sent from a smartphone on top of the obligatory espresso crema. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Perhaps you were listening to our program on a smartphone. Or perhaps you were listening to us online. Or maybe on one of the great radio stations across Asia that carry our program, like Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We send a shout out to the Faculty of Communication who run the radio station. Thanks for keeping it on the air. You can write to us at VOA Asia Facebook or VOA Asia at voanews.com. That's our mailing address online. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd, part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead.